Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Getting Light. We have on with us today, again, Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. Marion is back to talk about the problematic issues within the U.S. prison systems in comparison to other countries as well as her own. And Marion is not only a psychosocial therapist, but she is also an author of an upcoming book, and she can talk to you about that. But let's have Marion Jacobs, introduce yourself again. And I'm sorry to be starting so late, but it's getting to the point now where things are so chaotic in this country, everything is kind of slow. But Marion, are you on with us?
Hello, Leona. I am here.
How are you today?
I am fine. Yes, I am okay. Thank you for asking.
For the delay. So sorry for the delay. But Marion, again, we were in a really good conversation last week, and I wanted to pick up on some of the things that we discussed earlier. But if you can, just tell a little bit about the work that you've been doing throughout the years and your upcoming book as well.
Yes, in the Netherlands, I work with incarcerated people according an approach that I call deeper justice. And in my approach, I meet a human being behind the crime, and together with the incarcerated individual, I dive into issues that has happened in his life to give him the opportunity to come to more self-insight. In what issues, what kind of trauma or whatever has led to the crime. And on that way, rehabilitation can take place. I also work 3 days a week. I work with people who suffer a kind of autism or HDD. And in fact, I approach them on the same way. There I meet a human being behind his label that he got from psychiatry. I also have written a book about the American prison system, and in that book I have done research to the ground structure that lies beneath the prison system to get to more insight in how does the prison system work. What kind of mechanisms keep mass incarceration going while we know it's very devastating to people. That book is now in translation because I wrote it in Dutch, and it's now in translation into English, in very accessible English. It's also designed by a very professional artist because I want everybody to be able to read it, but I also want people to read it with the soul, with the heart, and with the mind. I'm also now graduating for my Master of Philosophy, and my thesis will be about the same subject. And in my thesis, I will compare the United States prison system with the concentration camps of World War II. And again, the emphasis is about lies with the ground structure beneath the system. So I want to emphasize the things that we do not see on the surface, but do influence what we see on the surface.
You know, I'm really, you just mentioned something too, that I was actually with my friends yesterday had taken me because I've been looking for a car lease. But she has a granddaughter that has autism, and I as doing social work for social services years ago, did have cases like that. But you also mentioned ADD and ADHD, and these are some of the things, too, that there's people that are incarcerated as well as in the communities with these disabilities as well. And that has a lot to do, sometimes the ADHD, I feel, has a lot to do with the anxiety, the dysfunction that goes on in their surroundings. And that's another thing I always talk about, even with this country, the way it's so dysfunctional. And because of every state being different and everything that they do, it's chaotic, but it also causes anxiety. And if you can talk a little bit more about that, I'd be interested to hear myself.
Well, I don't see autism or ADD at each day. How do you say it in English? ADHD. Sorry, I don't see it simply as disabilities, but it's more a way of life. Because when you are born, for instance, with autism, then it's a fact that it's a part of you. You cannot change it. It will always be with you. So with my clients, I'm not going to emphasize the autism, but I'm going to see how does autism express itself in an individual, and how can the person deal with it and implement it in his life instead of fighting against it. And that opens people up, because, for instance, one thing that you see with autism is that somebody needs more time to make decisions, or he needs more time to think about what somebody has said. Well, you could say, okay, this is autism, so it has to be solved. And I say, no, this is your way of dealing with questions or dealing with, you need more time before you can come to a conclusion or an answer. So instead of emphasizing autism as a disability, I more look at it as a way of life. And in fact, structure of that, this approach is in fact the same as what I do with incarcerated people. And that's interesting here, I think, because when I go to an incarcerated individual, he has to deal with the crime, and his crime he cannot undo his crime, the same as you cannot undo your so-called disorder. So you have to deal with it. You have to give it a place in all the aspects of your life. That's a whole different approach than fighting against it or punishing it in the case of incarceration. So I look at labels in another way than the majority does. And I must say, in the Netherlands, in psychiatry and psychology, there are more discussions, debates about how to approach labels. Because it's very easy to look only at the label, but the human being exists for much more than only the label. So every individual with autism is an authentic individual. You know, you cannot speak about the label. You cannot speak about, there is no, the autism doesn't exist. And that's exactly the same as what you see in prison. There is not, the prisoner does not exist. So it's another perspective on human life. That's why there are a lot of comparisons for me between people with labels, psychiatric labels, or people with the label prisoner or criminal.
The reason I say disability is because myself, I've often thought that I have ADD, not ADHD, but ADD. And the focus, because the focus is not there. And I felt that even in, when I was in school, it seemed like it was very difficult for me to comprehend right away. And so many people can read, and they can read quickly, and they can absorb. I have to sometimes go back over it a few times. So when I say a disability, it prevents us from doing as much as we would want to do if we didn't have that, you know, the attention deficit disorder.
Yeah, but the question is also interesting to ask, is a disability in somebody who has ADD, or is a disability in society? Because if society would give more space to people with ADD or autism or whatever, they would not suffer so much. You know, if somebody cannot read a text quickly, that's okay. I mean, it should be okay, but society demands a lot. It has, you know, we try to fulfill that picture that society expects us to be. And maybe that's more the problem than ADD or autism or another disability in, well, what we call disability in behavior. And that's, And I think when you look at, especially in the United States, but if you look then at incarceration and people who get released after their prison sentence, they have to fit that very difficult society with their disabilities of having the system internalized and having to reintegrate in the in society again and try to figure out how to deal with the trauma from the prison system.
Exactly.
Because
you know that it does make so much sense too. As you mentioned, in this country, there's just so much demands being made in trying to keep up. You know, when I was traveling, I have to say this, when I was traveling abroad, I noticed every country that I was in, it was so different because everything was laid back. It wasn't a rush thing. And when I came back to the States, I felt it right away because everything is it's like you have to keep up. It's at such a fast pace. And that could be, too, why I feel the way I do at times, too.
Yeah, so then your problem is not a possible ADD, but your problem is then that society doesn't accept your ADD. And that's, so the problem is then not your problem, it's in fact a society's problem. But that's not only in the United States, it's also in more Western countries that there is a lot of expectations. We have to be good, we have to succeed at all that. So society should ask itself, what is a good person? That's a value. We have no definition of a good person or what is success. Those are all values and they are applied on all of us. And that's why for many people, it's very hard to cope with society and all these expectations they have. That's what makes society hard, because I think there should, you know, every individual is different and everybody has its own qualities. But we expect so much. And lots of people also, what you see on social media, lots of people, they shout, you have to be yourself, you have to be yourself, you have to grow to, you can do whatever you want and you can be whoever you want. No, try to be yourself and don't push a value on it, because, you know, if you are yourself, you're not bad, you're not good, you are just who you are. And there's a lot of judging in this whole mechanism, what you see in society. But if you ask somebody, what is a good person? Like when we look at incarceration, now we have to transform bad people into good people. Or what is a bad person? And what is a good person? If somebody commits a crime, then a lot has happened before he did commit a crime. A crime is not an isolated act. It's embedded in all kinds of elements, in all kinds of life issues, in all kinds of inner issues. It's not just what we see on television or whatever. There is a whole story around it. And that's also what I see in my work with people with autism. When I look with my clients, I have many clients now, they all have their own individual story behind that label autism. And so it always goes back to, who am I as a person and what is my place in this world? Everyone is seeking for that.
You know, they're seeking in the wrong places. It's almost as though people, I watch the news all the time, and it's really sad to see that these news reporters, these journalists, they're so insecure. I won't say insecure, but they want to be like the others, you know, the ones that look the best on the news. They try to wear their hair the same. They try to stand the same, walk the same, talk the same. And I sometimes wonder, who is real? Who is the real person behind those faces? You know, what is it like when they're by themselves or when they're around their own family members? But that's the way this world is today. Everyone wants to, they want to focus on someone else that's going to make them look better, even if that other person isn't looking well. I mean, even with decisions, we live in a very diverse country, but we also live in a very controversial country, you know, conflicting between sides, and people feel they have to take sides to, you know, to be somebody or to keep up with someone. I don't know why, because taking sides to me is not being yourself, as you just mentioned, unless it's your own philosophy or your own, you know, your own feelings.
Yeah, I think when there is a lot of comparison between each other and trying to be, you know, compare and then trying to be better than the person. And there is a lot of taking sides. And when people take sides, it also means that you exclude other people who don't take that side. So then you already start exclusion of other human beings, like what you also see in racism and in a very extreme way you see it with mass incarceration. It's a form of exclusion. And mass incarceration is more like you exclude people who you consider being bad because they have committed a crime. And then you have the problem in the penal system that it's the crime itself that is judged. It's a crime that is condemned, but the crime cannot be undone. And the human being behind the crime is denied, it's not seen. That's the first step in dehumanization in the whole penal system. So everybody who cannot cope with society, it's not only people who commit a crime, there are also a lot of people who end up in prison innocent. There are people who did not commit crime, but they were on the wrong place, on the wrong time. They were too close to the crime, so they get committed. They get judged too. There are a lot of people, we have spoken before about this, a lot of people who have psychiatric disorders, trauma. That's a huge problem. We have people with addictions who end up in prison. So it's like, you know, one melting pot of undesirables. That's what I sometimes call it. The prison system, to me, in the United States, is a melting pot of undesirable people for society. And that is a shame. And that's dehumanizing. Mm. Because you cannot speak about rehabilitation. It's not there in any form. They try it, but no, it's not there. This is not rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot of, sometimes I think the decisions are made based on external opinions or external, you know, environments. There's people that can meet a prisoner and you can really like that prisoner, and yet you're hearing from people who somehow are connected with others who have biases that will turn their thoughts towards an individual that they like. It'll turn them in a different direction. You know, if I like somebody, I like that person. If I hear from others that, you know, this person did this or this or this, based on what they heard from someone else, I have to find out for myself. And there's a lot of people out there that have found out the hard way, but they found out themselves. They didn't believe or they didn't listen to, you know, others talking about it.
Yeah, I think what we miss in society is exactly what you say, is that when somebody says something, that we don't first try to investigate or look for ourselves if we agree with that person. We are like blind sheep, you know, following the leader, and we have come to be afraid to be to look for ourselves. What's going on? Do I agree with that person? You know, we don't do that anymore. And it's the same with incarcerated people. We only see the crime. We don't see the human being. So in fact, for a lot of people, there are not 2.3 million people incarcerated, but 2.3 million crimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why you can have mass incarceration. And if enough staff is also looking at incarcerated people that way, then you get this, all these excesses with, you know, beatings and torture, because those are forms of torture, but that it's also legal to have these punishments that are proven to be harmful and forms of torture, like solitary confinement longer than 15 days. You can apply these forms of torture when you don't see these people in prison as human beings anymore, but you only see them as crimes. And that's the big danger, and that's what's happening now. You cannot reform the prison system without first starting with looking at the people in prisons like as human beings with their own stories, with their own pain, with their own suffer, with their own trauma, with their own issues. Somebody who is born healthy, has a good youth, nothing is wrong, everything is going okay, then he will not commit a crime. So something has happened along the way that he was able to do it. And we have to look at that.
And you know what else I noticed too? I was doing some research. I came across, there's two people, say, incarcerated, right? They both have the same name. And I was doing some research on the internet, and I came across one who is in prison because they had actually raped someone, and the other one was in prison for committing an offense, but he had been a victim of molestation himself as a child. And I'm saying two people with the same name in the same state, one is a pedophile and the other one was affected by a pedophile. And I'm saying, what do people in society do? I mean, when they see something like this, do they automatically, you know, judge? Do they, you know, do they look at these two people as being one and the same when they're two different individuals? I started thinking about that, and I realized if that happens with two people with the same names, all these people that are incarcerated, what does that say? Especially when it comes to wrongful convictions. You know, these are things that I just, when I think about it, because I do extensive research, when I think about some of these issues, I'm saying how many people are in for wrongful convictions based on, you know, names. I know that there's been a lot of people who have been exonerated throughout the years, but they either were in because they looked similar to somebody that did it, or they were just, in, like you said, in the wrong place at the wrong time. So these are some of the issues I think about, too.
Yeah, because that's strange. You know, I saw that, too, one day, a long time ago, one day somebody had murdered somebody else and two other people who were close to that but didn't have anything to do with that crime, they got sentenced, too. And that makes no sense at all. Then I think about, hey, do you really need to get these prisons full? Because full prisons, yeah. we know that mass incarceration is a $1 million industry. It's an industry. It's not. It has not so much to do, I think, with judgment or rehabilitation or whatever. But it has more to do, I think, with money. There was this article that one, you know, that corporations, I don't know in what state, corporations in a state sued the government because the prison was not full enough. So they had a loss of money. And the politics had to... And politics had to compensate with a few million dollars, had to compensate those corporations because there was too less crime. What are you doing in your country?
Really?
I
think you had mentioned it, and I did. I went on the internet and saw it. It was like the country, the state was being sued because they were emptying the prisons a little bit. I can't believe that they would do such a thing. But they were being sued because they weren't keeping the prisons full enough.
Exactly. So what are we talking about? Mass incarceration is a very conscious choice. It's not something that has been grown too big. It's also, of course, but it's also a conscious choice. And people have to understand it, that your country deliberately lock up people for crazy length of sentence, time, and, you know, they release at the end, if they get released, they release people who are more traumatized. It would scare me if we would have your prison system here in the Netherlands. It really would scare me because I would understand that, you know, the people, everyday people do get released, but they all are so traumatized, I would be afraid of them.
Yeah.
And that's
what
I
have. One of the things is I've actually had people, and I was going to interview one, but she was saying that her loved one, there was like you said before, that three people had committed a crime. One person committed the crime, the other two were with them. So they all got sentenced. But one of them, the one that committed the crime, had a less sentence than one of the others. And this was another thing that really shocked me, was the fact that the person that did the crime got less time than one of the people that were with the others, with the yes, three of them. How does this happen? Like you say, this in America?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, and it has nothing to do anymore with what incarceration should be for. I mean, if you take it serious, that you really look at people who commit a crime, they are judged, so they need to do a sentence. But you have so many people who are really a victim of the system, the innocent people, the plea bargain people who are the most people never see court. So it's just a financial deal. So that all makes it so insane. And then you have these games, and I hate these games. I saw an article, someone sent it to me. It was about the prison system in Georgia. They see that there is a lot of misconduct between, you know, prisoners and guards and a lot of issues, and now they are going to start an investigation. Sorry, you don't need investigations anymore because there is so much material about what's all wrong. They keep investigating things, starting research, starting investigations. Why? It's already known. We talk about it here on the show. When I wanted to write my book, I had so many resources. Just found it on the internet. The internet, YouTube, is all full of all these information. You go to the human rights pages, you go to Amnesty International, you go to the Marshall Project. There are so many websites with very decent information. Why, again, new investigations? And what's happening? What's going to happen after that? Is it going to be changed?
In most cases, too, when they say investigations never happen. And, you know, this is frustrating, too, because when they talk, even with the Department of Justice now, the Department of Justice will investigate if anybody's civil rights are violated. So they say. But prisoners have said not to even contact the Department of Justice because they're part of the penal system. They're part of the government, and they won't go against their own. Which is ridiculous, because where does the justice come in for anybody that's having their rights violated? And a lot of these people in prison, unfortunately, are in prison because people don't want to take the time out to find out anything about them, to find out why they're in prison or anything like that, when they're victims just as well as others.
Yeah, exactly. But before that, you have this other thing. You know, when you look at the Eighth Amendment, we've been talking about the Eighth Amendment. And like this last investigation that I read about from Georgia, then they mentioned the Eighth Amendment has to be followed, and it's not followed. There is beatings, there is this, there is that. But the problem is the whole prison system is based on punishment. It's based on power, fear, power, fear, punishment, torture. You can't rehabilitate in that system, because if you want to rehabilitate, then you have to change the system. The system is really, even the buildings are built for punishment, like solitary confinement, these buildings of solitary confinement. Longer time ago, we spoke about the showers in some prisons where they, you know, regulated temperature on the outside. That man that was burned in the shower, and it happened before. So the buildings are not prepared for rehabilitation. And rehabilitation is useless when it's only about a training or one program. Rehabilitation takes place, or restorative justice can take place, if the staff that works with the prisoners every day from from the morning till the evening, when they start to treat the prisoners as human beings. by being polite, by being respectful, by being equal, like I do with my clients. You know, so prisoners cannot rehabilitate in 2 hours a week, where all the other hours in the week they go further with the punishment. So rehabilitation doesn't work that way. It starts with everyday program, getting up, getting out of your cell, being greeted by staff, good morning, have a nice breakfast. The normal common things that we expect from these people, we have to teach them that by a human approach every minute of the day.
Yeah. But
what you see now is there are investigations, and we have to follow the Eighth Amendment, we have to treat them with respect, and et cetera. And we give trainings in restorative justice or rehabilitation, but it doesn't work because there are still 2.3 million people in prison. Nothing has changed. How long are we doing the radio show? A year? And nothing has changed, Leona, because the system has to change. The system itself has to change. You can't say I abolish solitary confinement if there is no... If you want to abolish solitary confinement or one piece of the puzzle, you have to change the whole puzzle. You have to change the whole system. And that's the problem. It's about the mindset. Prison reform starts with reforming your own mindset. It starts in community, not in the prison. Reform starts in community. And community has communicated to politics. Community has to form one force, because the people in prisons are their family members, their community members, their school teachers, their students, their fellow citizens. And community has to decide this is enough. Sentencing, okay, because if there has been committed a crime, there has to be some form of punishment, but use the time of a sentence for rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
In the Netherlands, the punishment is taking away the freedom. So locking up itself is a punishment. But the time somebody is locked up is used for rehabilitation. But in your country, it goes on. Punishment goes on inside the prison
system. Exactly.
And there you see, and that's what you see. What makes it very clear that the system is really sick and dangerous is that you see a role reversal inside the system. Like the prisoner who is the offender on the street becomes the victim in the system. And not all the guards, but guards who abuse their own power are in fact the offenders in the system. You see a role mm-hmm. reversal. You see that crimes that are punished on the street are happening inside the prison system without really consequences. If you torture somebody in society, you get sentenced, and if you torture somebody in the prison system, well, it's okay. You might be on non-active. I don't know how to say that in English, but you don't get really punished if you do that in a system like what we, you know, a few months ago when we heard about the women prison Lowell in Florida with all these mm-hmm. women who are raped. Rape in the streets is a crime, and rape in the prison is not seen as a crime, not that way. And that's
to know what happened with that. Did they investigate? And if so, what happened with that? Was anyone held accountable?
The only thing that I read from the secretary of the Department of Corrections, that was the last thing that I read, was that he said, I cannot really literally explain it anymore, but he didn't believe everything that they had found, something like that.
That's
that
always
really
the case. That's
that
always
was
the
it,
case
yes.
when it's against the department. It's always the case. And it's sad because people are getting away with murder. And, you know, I have to say, society itself, members of society, are just as guilty. because members of society, because someone commits, and when we talk about victims, they say, what about the real victims? Well, the real victims are the ones that are inside who are wrongfully convicted, those who have been put on death row and have actually died before the truth came out. So members of society are just as guilty when they are so adamant about voting for the death penalty, and they're just as guilty when they are adamant about punishment for these people. A lot of people, I'm sure, when they hear about prisoners being abused by the COs and the, you know, the prison staff, I'm sure they're saying, well, they deserve it. They committed crimes. Well, the same people that they're saying deserve it because they committed crimes, those people are being abused by people that committed crimes where society, like you say, because of uniforms or titles, society turns a blind eye. But that puts all of us, everybody out there that's voting for these things or that's in agreement with the punishment they're getting beyond punishment, it shows that people in society are just as criminal-like when they have these kind of attitudes. And as far as the ability...
Yes, and I think you cannot compare the position of a victim to the position of an offender. You know, when somebody is convicted of a crime, his punishment is that time of his life is taken away. That's a punishment.
Exactly.
And, you know, wanting endless retaliation leads nowhere. It leads only to more violence and fear, and it's a negative spiral. It is not a solution, because if it would be a solution, then you would not have mass incarceration in your country. So,
that's the thing, though, is if all of them, if everybody was held accountable, whether it be prison and, you know, people in the community, or whether it be people that are working for the government, whoever. But in this country, you see so much unfairness. I mean, it's not needed. But people, it's who you know. It's who you know that either get sentenced to harsh crimes, or they get freed, or they go to prison for life or life without parole. But it's who you know, and this is what's so unfair.
Yeah, it is unfair, but the whole system is unfair. And, you know, it scares the hell out of me that I think about, you know, that if you get sentenced, that you are lucky when you even survive the system. You know, that people are beaten to death. That if I think about it, I can't imagine that. When I was in Miami, I had to ask for the way. And I asked the police officer. At that time, I didn't know so much as I knew now, because I wasn't that far in my research. And later on, I thought, the militarized police, what if I had been driving the wrong way, or what if I would have done something that would have looked wrong and I would have ended up in prison? I would be so scared, Leona, to be on your... I could not survive that prison. I couldn't.
Mm-mm.
And the fact that it is that way, that, you know, the people hardly survive this prison, you know, these guards who beat up for fun, and the power play, and it's like, you know, because somebody said to me, what we saw on television in Guantanamo Bay, it was not an exception. It happens every day in the system.
Yeah.
What kind of people are there, you know, to do that?
I remember years ago, I went to a Mayan Indian school in Guatemala, in Quetzaltenango, up in the mountains. And while I was in this school, I was with this friend of mine, Martha Toomey. She was from Wisconsin. And Martha had been to the school before. It's one of these schools where you can go for a certain amount of time. You can leave, come back, or whatever, one-on-one with the teachers. And so we were sitting outside on the bench, and there was a woman who was with her husband and her child. She had the child on a pouch in the front of her, and he had her arm all twisted up. I mean, you could tell she was in pain. And I went over and I tried to help, and she motioned me not to do anything because she was afraid of what he would do to me, I guess. So there was a woman walking by, and I said, Martha, ask her what can be done, or how do you call the police or whatever. And, you know, she, because Martha could speak the language, and the woman told her that these people were the police. She said, if you call the police, nothing will be done. She said they were trained by the United States government, in, you know, for military. And she said they have that hardcore way about them that even the women, if you call on them for things like that, they just completely ignore it. She said they wouldn't do anything. And I'm saying this is why I think you hear about so much domestic violence going on in the world, because the United States is training these people, and this is what they're training them to do. And you see that in the prisons too. They come out of the military right into the penal system, and they still have the same behaviors.
Yeah, and that's so far away from you know, rehabilitation. That has nothing to do with rehabilitation.
No.
And I think, you know, when you think about the prison system, reform would cost a lot of money, but all the money is going to all these wars. You know, now you have been withdrawn from Afghanistan, and, you know, the United States went into Afghanistan saying they want to bring democracy and all that, but it was only because they wanted to build a gas pipeline through Afghanistan. It was, you know, your military, sir, your military is highly privatized. Those are all corporations too. So money is also war is also money. And what you see is all the tax money, the most tax money of, you know, the regular people is going into these wars and going into these corporations and going to the wealthy ones, while you have your people incarcerated, you have so many homeless people, you have hardly access to health care. Look at what happened with the pandemic. You have the infrastructure is very bad. So there is your own country is in decline because your country is only focused on other countries to fight. There is this way of violence in your country. You have this, you know, these gun laws inside your country. There is a lot of fear among people, but there's also so much violence. Now they are focusing on China. Now the war in the Middle East has come to an end. Now it's going to be China and Asia, you know.
When does it stop? It's money. Every time there's a war, there's money, or they're coming back with something from another country that's going to benefit this country. And if they would just let people live, let people just, I mean, like I say, this is a fast-paced country, and it's about money, and it's just getting worse all the time. It's causing so many people to do so many things they would not normally do. The prisons are full because there's a lot of poverty in this country, and instead of trying to make things equal, they're taking
exactly. Yeah, because if you know, because there is a lot of poverty, education is very expensive, healthcare is very difficult. So yes, then you get mass incarceration. That's all connected. If you look at Norway is the big example, but Norway has a very low crime rate, but education, for instance, is free for all the people in Norway. So whether you have a lot of money or you have not so much money, everyone has access to free education in universities and whatever you want to do. So everybody, then you get a whole people, all the citizens are educated, which means they are able to think further than only the surface. So you have a higher developed people, and so you have a low crime rate. That's what you see in Norway. So what you see in the United States is inside the country is in a decline, while they keep pumping all that millions and trillions of dollars in all these wars. They have bases all over the world, even here in the Netherlands and Germany, everywhere, with nuclear weapons. They want to be this exception, this first power in the world. And now it's getting to be scary, because China is huge, and China does not want war. China wants to work together. So once that the United States say, okay, there is another huge economic country developing, so we are not alone anymore. Is the United States going to accept it or not? If it's not, then we have huge troubles because they are already building bases around China with nuclear weapons pointed at the big cities. So when I saw all this, I thought maybe the United States is the most dangerous country in the world, not the Muslim extremists, not the Middle East countries or whatever. But I have come to believe that I fear the United States the most now.
You know what I think about the United States is that, and you talk about fear. What I look at the United States is I recently, like Joe Biden was saying, he was trying to get free education or whatever for the people, but he's running into, and I'm not a fan of Joe Biden, I'm not sticking up for him, but he's trying to get, you know, free education and some of the same things that are in other countries, but he's, again, now he's running up against a lot of opposition, even with the budget he's trying to put together. But the United States, if they really wanted to see change in this country, positive change, they would take an example from each and every country, like your country, Norway, and all these other countries that right now are doing so well. They would take and follow suit. But when you see that they see the progress, they see the successes, and they still are determined to have mass incarceration, all these other things, then you know that the United States of America is not really trying to make positive change. Like you say, it's corporate. It's all of this corporate stuff that they want to do and make all this money, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I think, you know, the power has to come from the people. The people are abandoned by politics. And whether you are, you know, whether you talk about the Democratic Party or the Republicans, they both are right wing. Even the Democratic Party, they are not so different anymore. Your Democratic Party is, you can compare that one with our right party. And Republicans, you can compare to extreme right. You have no left party. And then there is this stupid idea that socialism is mixed up with communism, which are totally different. We have a social foundation, and our tax money is going back into our own society. That's why we pay taxes for this free education, for affordable healthcare for everybody, you know, and all that. So we have also a lower crime rate. So that our tax money, we do pay a lot of taxes, but it's going back to, we all profit from it too. Your country is using that money overseas, and it's, you know, for the corporations and all that. But we are not communist. You know, my kids choose their own school. I choose my own hospital. We have all these free choices to do what we want to do. But we do have socialism. But a lot of people in the United States are so focused on socialism is communism. And it's not that. It's different. So you have no... The problem in your country is you don't have a social foundation. And that's why you have mass incarceration, because if people cannot rely on a steady social foundation where the basic needs are met, then you have a high crime rate. Then you have this gun problem. Then you have this fear problem. I've told you before, racism is a problem for the people on the streets, but it's a tool for the corporations, because for as long as people in the streets are fighting each other, they cannot unite and stand up to the corporations. So it's a way of divide and conquer politics.
Exactly.
So it's a tool.
We're going to pick up on this next Wednesday, Marianne. And if you can just real quickly give everyone your contact information and your information on the book. And I want to let everybody know, Marianne Jacobs is not only writing a book, but she's also been very much involved in criminal justice. She's been involved in the prisons. Everything that she's writing about is something that she either experienced or that she's done extensive research in. There's a lot of people out there writing books. They have not even visited with the prisoner. So I want everybody to know this, because we have not only a prisoner advocate, not only a psychosocial therapist, but we have someone that is very, very experienced in what she is discussing. So, Marion, if you can give your information, and I want to thank you for coming on, please, right now, give your information. Thank you.
Yeah, my website is www.deeperjustice.com, and you can contact me there and read my essays. My email, MariamJacobs67@gmail.com. I also am with my own name on Facebook, and I have a Facebook, Deeper Justice. I am on Instagram, and I am with my own name, and I am on LinkedIn with my own name.
And Marion, I want to thank you, because I'll tell you, anybody, I see them on TV, everybody's always promoting somebody's book, and it really upsets me, because these are people that haven't even been involved with advocacy work with prisoners. They're making money off the blood, sweat, and tears of people that they don't even know. And when I see people like yourself that not only is writing the book, but also looking for ways to be able to send free books to the prisoners, and also be able to distribute the books to some of the professors at the schools. So I want to thank you so much. I look forward to your coming back. And I encourage the audience to call in, ask questions to Marion, do feedback, comments, whatever you can do. Please get involved, because we're trying to right now see positive changes in the United States of America. Marion Jacobs is from one of those countries that do not have mass incarceration, that have humane conditions for the incarcerated men and women. So please join us next Wednesday at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Marion, thank you so much again for coming on with us.
You're welcome, Leona.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.